to the sixth case of the day, Hillman versus Barnard. Mr. Zabuski.
Please, the court. My name is Gary Zabuski, and I represent the appellant. In this particular case, there has been a series of events that transpired in the last 24 hours that has caused some confusion for me and my ability to make oral argument. Apparently, there were documents left out of the appendix on the government brief, and there was a motion filed on August 2nd for leave to file a supplemental appendix, and apparently that order has been granted. The problem with it is that the SSR 003P and SSR 021P, yesterday was the first time I ever saw these documents. And if they had been provided to me prior to my reply, I would have had a whole different reply in regards to this matter. But these documents, which are part of the government's appendix, sets forth the policy.
You want an opportunity to reply? Is that what you're asking for?
With this not being supplied, I think I should have the opportunity to reapply, because
I think the chief judge is perfectly kind enough to give you this opportunity.
What is it that you want to reply to?
This document shows the procedure that administrative law judge is supposed to follow when he's considering obesity. Mm-hmm. And I've never had this document in my possession. I've had excerpts of this document.
Yeah, you were aware of the policy.
Right, but I wasn't aware of
the complete document. Is that what you're saying?
Of the procedure they're supposed to follow.
I see.
In regards to obesity.
All right. And in that regard, you would like to supplement by way of briefing a further response to that filing? Is that what you would like?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right, you may have 10 days to do that.
Okay.
I'm not precluding you arguing any other point. But you're in a position where you just want to have a reply and not have an oral presentation today. Is that your position?
Well, I could go ahead and present my oral argument too.
Well, I don't want to disadvantage you. That is, if you have an argument to be made that you would make, for example, apart from the additional reply we're allowing you to file, you may do that.
Okay. Well, my main argument is the administrative law judge did nothing to follow procedures set forth in SSR Social Security ruling 003P. They set up a procedure for him to follow. He makes no reference to any of the procedures that he was supposed to follow in his decision. He doesn't even mention the word obesity in his decision.
Was there any evidence presented that would trigger the application of that policy?
Yes, the fact that the state agency evaluated her under 9.09, which existed at that time when she filed her application. She filed her application in 1998, and she didn't meet the listing 9.09 because she was 5'10" and weighed 198 pounds, and she had to be 5'10" and weighed 304 pounds. So she didn't meet that listing. Then they changed the rule. They did away with that listing, 9.09, and they came up with they eliminated the obesity issue as a listing. Then they came up with this Social Security ruling for the administrative law judges to follow.
I guess what I'm driving at is beyond the mere fact of obesity, if in fact that is in the record as an established proposition, were there any facts relative to the effect of that on her ability to work that would have triggered the application of this policy?
There were facts in the fact that she testified that because of obesity, she was limited in ability to sit, limited in ability to stand, and to walk.
Any medical evidence to support that?
The only evidence is the fact that she testified that in a year's time she had put on 100 pounds, and that
the medical reports did not corroborate her testimony about her ability to sit or ambulate or do anything else necessary for work.
There were medical reports that said she had severe pain and the obesity. It did say that obesity causes severe pain, but Social Security ruling 003P talks about obesity and how it impacts upon musculoskeletal problems.
My question is, under what circumstances is the agency required to, on its own, essentially, apply this policy if there isn't something in the record of an evidentiary nature, a factual nature, to justify that?
Well, SSR 003P states, when the evidence in a case does not include a diagnosis of obesity, but does include clinical notes or other medical records showing consistently high body weight or BMI, we may ask a medical source to clarify whether the individual has obesity. However, in most such cases, we will use our judgment, to establish the presence of obesity based on the medical findings and other evidence in the case record.
And it would be your contention that the evidence meets that threshold standard,
right,
so that the policy kicks in?
Because under the BMI, she's morbidly obese. At 910, 198 pounds.
That evidence was never introduced, as I understand it. You're suggesting that, as I understand your existing briefing, that the agency should have done those calculations on its own. It's not something that was affirmatively introduced by the claimant here.
Right. That's their obligation to do that, according to this Social Security ruling.
And that's what's coming in the subsequent briefing.
And it was in this transition period, because they took away 9.09 on... in 1999, and the hearing was in 2000. It was just like the transition period from going away from 9.09 and then formulating these rulings. So, but he makes no reference to obesity at all in his decision, and it should be considered.
Thank you. Ms. Miskin.
Good morning. My name is Mara Miskin. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this matter. Frankly, I'm shocked by counsel's claims that he's never seen these SSRs 00-3P or 02-01. His entire argument is based on both of these. He actually should have included in his brief, but then since I also referenced it in response to his brief, I noticed that I didn't include it in my appendix as I had indicated that I would have. So just for the court's convenience, I included that. When I discovered it, unfortunately, Monday. So I'm shocked by his claims that he's never seen these SSRs. In fact, if you look at his brief, in his main brief, page 3, 6, 7, 14, 15, he cites both of these. Also in his reply brief,
he claims he doesn't have Ms. Miskin the complete document.
He should have. That doesn't seem reasonable to cite to something you don't have complete access to.
Well, I believe that was his representation. Was it a document that would have been afforded by the government?
It's easily accessible on SSA.gov, and that's the reference that's noted in the motion and that's noted.
Well, perhaps when he comes back, we'll get a further explanation.
Okay. And to his point that the ALJ didn't discuss her obesity, I'd like to point out to this court that in his obesity argument, other than citing to her weight at various times in the record, he's pointed to no evidence whatsoever of any limitations from any medical source whatsoever that would prohibit her or prevent her from returning to her sedentary past relevant work. None whatsoever, and it's his burden to prove that, and he's not done that in this case. And contrary to his assertion, the ALJ indeed considered her weight. In fact, he considered her highest weight of record, which was 279 pounds, which the consultative physician, Dr. Schroff, noted. 279 pounds at 5'10". And nevertheless, Dr. Schraff, the ALJ noted that Dr. Schraff found that she suffered from chronic backache and no neurological deficits. He also explicitly relied on, in his decision, on two state agency reviewing physicians who also relied on that weight of 279 pounds and still found she could do light. Her treater, Dr. Smith, found she could do light work. During the relevant time, she was looking for light work. And despite all this evidence showing that she can, in fact, do light work, to give her every benefit of the doubt, the ALJ limited her to sedentary work. So this is not a case where we're left to wonder whether the ALJ considered her weight. He did. Counsel has only cited the bare testimony that she testified that her obesity limited her. If you look to the transcript of the hearing, she did not say that her obesity limited her in any way. At her hearing, she did not mention that her obesity caused her problems with ambulation or anything. And the same can also be said in the disability report. She did not claim that her obesity impaired her. As for counsel's claims that she put on 100 pounds, the record does not corroborate a 100-pound weight gain. Her weight fluctuated. She was 240 pounds around the closest time to her onset in August 96. She fluctuated to 230, went up to 279, 252. There was no 100-pound weight gain. And contrary to counsel's assertions, there's no requirement, and no requirement will be found in these two SSRs, that the agency has to conduct a BMI analysis. The point of the SSRs is to make sure that the ALJ has considered the functional effects, the effects that obesity causes on functioning, and the ALJ did that here. No weight, no BMI equates with a disability finding. It's a case-by-case analysis of what does the obesity cause, and the ALJ considered that here. And I can't stress enough that at no point has Ms. Helms shown that pointed to any evidence to show that she's unable to do her sedentary past relevant work. If there are no further questions, I thank you.
Counsel?
I agree with counsel that this should have been attached to all of my briefs at the federal district level and at this level, but it was not done so because I did not have custody or possession of these documents.
Well, for the purposes of producing a brief that you have submitted and referencing the document, what did you do? Use parts of it or had access to
it? I'm a member of NOSCR, and we have a publication, monthly publication, and they had an article on it, and that's what I used to refer to. Because I didn't have the actual SSR.
Was it immediately available to you, and you didn't avail yourself of the document, or?
I've tried to locate this document for several years because this issue of obesity has been a big issue with Minnesota.
They kept this document a secret from me all these years.
Well, I don't know why they didn't give it to me at the federal district level.
Neither do I.
You know, I
could get. Did you ask for it?
Did I ask for one?
Yeah.
But they didn't include it. We talked about it, about SSR, but they didn't attach any to their briefs. I didn't have one attached to my brief.
Apparently it is in the public domain, counsel. Do you have a response to that?
I don't know where to get it at, apparently, because I have tried to find it.
Ah, well, you know you've got it. You never have to look again.
True. It'd be very helpful in the future.
All right, I want to understand that what we're allowing is in effect a supplemental reply brief,
right?
It should only speak to those matters that you've unearthed or feel relevant as a result of having the full document. Judge Sykes makes a very good point in it being a public document that arguably should have been available to you. But in the interest of letting you make the case as best you can for Ms. Helms, we'll permit the supplemental, but it obviously should speak only to those matters that you feel relevant as a result of having the full document.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the seventh case of the day.